Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, it's Toby Mathis.
I'm Jeff Webb.
And you're listening to Tax Tuesdays. Welcome to Tax Tuesday, where we are bringing tax knowledge to the masses. I guess I should actually say that. There's a whole bunch of questions already. You guys are really... Somebody says, is there any audio? Apparently. Hopefully you guys can all hear. If anybody's having trouble hearing, well, they wouldn't be able to tell me, would they? So I'm not going to ask. So hopefully everybody can hear. Will this be recorded? Yes. And there's a bunch of other questions, but we won't worry about it. So let's just jump right on in. What is Tax Tuesday? First off, happy Thanksgiving week.
Yep.
Jeff just correctly noted that it is hump day today if you are not having to work on whatever it is.
Thursday and Friday.
So it's hump day. I'm brain dead at this point. Ask live and we'll answer questions before the end of the webinar, especially today. We're going to ask for you guys to work with us on this, since we're going over the difference between the current tax laws and the proposals that have come from the Biden. I guess you'd say President-elect Biden. I don't know if you'd say that yet. But no matter what you say, someone's going to yell at you. So Biden camp versus Trump camp, as far as their tax policies. It's really easy with Trump because he didn't make any. he just said status quo. He wanted to reduce the middle class tax burden, which, other than the payroll tax, he hadn't really talked about too much. Send in questions to Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. We answer quite literally hundreds of questions every week, and we get inundated. You guys just keep doing it. It's fun. If you need a real detailed response, you need to be a client. You need to be part of our Platinum portal. You need to be a tax client, one or both. And then this is fast, fun, and educational. We want to get back and help educate. We do have opening questions, and what are the differences between the Biden and Trump tax plans? And what should you do before the end of the year if we are worried about tax increases? And I'll let you guys know, I was teaching a class about 2 weeks ago. I thought that was really well, and I was going to do a little bit of the comparison on Trump and Biden, but I didn't get a chance. We just were too short. But I had mentioned a couple of the proposed changes by Biden, and a guy wrote me about a one-page letter telling me how partisan I was, and like just, you know, giving me this big old, yeah, you're just the, you know, you should let somebody else talk if you're going to give partisan discussion. And I was like, wow, I went back and listened to myself. And I was like, all I had said was, this is what Biden had proposed. And I explained what had passed in 2017 under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which apparently I didn't specify that Trump was president and that he doesn't make laws, but that Congress had passed it. So they wanted me to blame him for something. Anyway, it was just really wild. So I know some of you guys have some triggers on this. Try not to read too much in if we say Biden or Trump. We're just giving you facts. I don't want to be supportive on either side. I'm just going to tell you what the numbers are. And then we'll go over what should be done and what can be done before the end of the year if you're worried about the tax increases, because there is a candidate that had tax increases as part of their platform, and one that didn't have much on the way of tax, but who's saying that they wanted to lower taxes. So we'll go over this. Let's go over some of the questions real quick. Here's a few. I see people already. We have Elliot on. We have Tavia on. We have Pio on. And so you have a couple tax professionals, bookkeeper. We have, let's see who else is. I know we have Patty rolling around out there. And you and I, Tavia, yep. Patty, Elliot. Yep, there we are. So you have a bunch of people that are able to answer your tax questions while we're going through this as well. I am going to be reading some of these out, and Jeff and I will answer as best we can. Somebody says, can you compare solo 401k with checkbook control versus IRA with checkbook control? So Ryan, real simple, a solo 401k, you can contribute more. You can contribute. There's an employee side. There's an employer side. There's not the same limitations as far as income that exists with traditional IRAs. There are some business, the simple IRAs and the SEP IRAs. But the biggest difference come, you know, day in and day out is that an IRA always has to have a custodian. And IRA is also subject to something called unrelated debt financed income. So if you have a loan in an IRA, you're going to have tax consequences most likely. That same is not true with a 401k. In a 401k, you can be self-trusteed. And so people with IRAs oftentimes will put together an LLC inside the IRA, and they call it checkbook control because the LLC allows them to basically write a check. So that covers the custodial issue. But what it doesn't ever cover is the UDFI issue. And that's always a big one. Plus, in an IRA, it's an individual account. So mom and dad have IRAs and they want to have checkbook control. Guess what they're doing? They're each either having a LLC or they're going to partner up and try to do it that way. Whereas in a 401k, you could have one LLC for the plan and it could have both mom and dad in it without any issues. All right. I'm sure there's a bunch of others that we could dive into. I was giving you the 10,000 foot view. Somebody says, I wanted to ask a question about capital gains tax when selling a property. I want to open an IRA and reduce my tax liability and pay less capital gains tax. What would I need to do to protect my money received when the house is sold? Roxanne, they're not really related to each other. So it depends on what type of capital gains you have. But if those are long-term capital gains, in any capital gains, you're not going to be using, you can't fund an IRA without active income.
No, you're going to have earned income to fund mm-hmm. any kind of retirement.
Yeah. So usually with real estate, there's a question as to whether it's your personal property, whether it's rental property, whether it's an investment property. Because if it's investment property, you can 1031 and defer the liability indefinitely. If it's personal property, like your personal residence, then you could do it has to be a primary personal residence. You lived in two of the last 5 years, you could avoid tax on single up to 250, married up to 500,000.
Correct.
And if it's a flip, it's something entirely different. It's not even considered real estate. It's considered inventory. So there's all little pieces there. Our solar income tax credits likely to go back up? They were on a sunsetting trajectory, question mark. Yeah, they're down to 26% income tax credit on solar, and they're still going down. I forget what it is.
Yeah, but I think we'll probably get into that. That's one of the things I see under Biden as actually going back up.
I do too. I think that Biden has shown at least verbally, has said he wants to promote alternative energy. So we will get to that. Oh, somebody says, it's awesome that you answered the question. It is a rental property. Yeah, so Roxanne, I'd probably do a 1031 exchange on that. If you don't know what that is, I'm sure our guys be happy to enlighten you on it. It just means that I can trade it for more property of equal or greater value. And it doesn't have to be one property. It could be two. It could be 10. It could be whatever real estate, as long as you're replacing the value.
Right.
Somebody says, changes to SALT, will it happen? One of my guys are already responding. It depends on who gets the Senate, right? If we're deadlocked, it's going to be really tough to get rid of stuff. But I want to get rid of it. I know that I think Biden wants to get rid of that state and local tax. And right now it's capped at 10,000.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that SALT is not going to get more beneficial to taxpayers. If anything, it's going to get worse.
You think so? I don't know. I thought that Biden might want
to. I can't see him doing it because it tends to benefit people that have more wealth.
Yeah, that's true. Because he wants to raise taxes, anybody over 400,000. I don't know. It seems to me like if you're in Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, Maryland, California, you're probably paying over $10,000 just in your property tax.
Yeah.
Somebody says, Toby, you mentioned that if I live in a property two of the last 5 years, I can write off $250,000. However, I am one of five joint tenants on the property. The write-off is still $250,000 or $50,000.
Joint tenants. So it has to be your primary residence, and you have to own the property. If you own it in joint tenancy, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think you're going to get that exemption.
Yeah, I think I know for certain that it's going to be the $250 for the property unless you're married to one of the joint tenants. Because like a husband and wife owning it as joint tenants, they're considered the same owner. But in that particular case, I have to look at it. That's really interesting. I have a feeling that you're going to be limited to either a proportion or not eligible at all because you have to be the owner and you have to have lived in it two of the last 5 years as right. Primary in that. It's that ownership hurdle that throws us off. Elliot or Pio, if you guys know that, chime in, please. It's right down there. I'm curious. Somebody else says Biden wants to eliminate the 1031 exchange. Well, let's jump into these. Some people are saying, hey, how come you're not advancing the slide? Because I'm reading the question now, so I always get into this. And as of next year, we're going to start doing these with videos so you can look at Jeff's and my smiling faces so you're not just looking at an empty screen sometimes. we'll move over to the Zoom platform like all of our other events, and we'll see if we can figure that. Some people need a civics lesson. Yes, they do, Mark. You'd be shocked. I actually wrote the guy back, and he was not very nice. I think people, some people are just very partisan. And I was like, you know, I didn't say anything. I said I didn't blame Trump on everything because he didn't pass it, because technically it was Congress that did it. But I said if he had given us any proposals, I would have been happy to have brought him up. He was like, arr. So anyway, we'll
get keep going. And you know, presidents get credit and blame for things that they have nothing to do with all the time.
Yeah. Well, part of it is we have a system where they're supposed to have gridlock. Joint tenants is amongst the five siblings or 20% owner. It sounds like you might be tenants in common, but maybe you're joint tenants, in which case I think we'd still have to look. I think you might be eligible for a portion, but I'd have to look at it. I don't want to just talk. Any reform to the opportunity zones? I didn't hear anything on the opportunity zones, but we are going to jump into a bunch of other fun stuff first. All right. Numero uno, which I'll go through each of these, and Jeff, we'll just pontificate on these because there's a whole bunch of little changes out there. The biggest difference is, and since Trump really didn't put anything out, then you just kind of know that most of this was put out by presumptive president-elect Biden. Is that fair to say that?
Yeah, they have started to transition, so.
I would say president-elect Biden, then. Some of you guys are out there that are conservatives are going to flip out at me.
Mr. Trump has not conceded, but he did authorize a transition to start yesterday.
Yep. The GOA or GAO.
GAO.
GAO. Yeah. It's always nice when you find out that they've been giving the threatening her dog. That's not very nice. If you threaten somebody's animal, you're just not a good human being at that point. All right. So let's talk about tax plans. So the first one was an additional payroll tax on high earners. And I'll go over how this works, but it's just basically understanding that there's two pieces to payroll taxes. There's the old age, disability, and survivors, also known as Social Security, and there's Medicare, which is a medical catch-all. The Medicare never goes away. It's taxed on every dollar you earned income you make. If you have OADSI, it phases out at, this year, I think it was $137,700. And then it comes back. What he's going to have it do is come back. And I'll show you guys how that works. He's going to increase income tax on high income individuals, specifically anybody over $400,000. He proposed an increase to the capital gains rate by basically taking away the 20% bracket for folks that are making over a certain dollar amount, being that $1 million. And then he wants to tax wealth generally. So he hasn't really shown us exactly what he's going to do. He's talked about letting the estate tax sunset back to the 5 million, gift tax sunsetting to the 5 million. They talked about an annual wealth tax, but it sounds like they're open to anything to hit the higher end folks. And then they want to increase the corporate income tax rate. Right now it's at 21%. They want to bump that to 28%. And then the elimination of the 199A deduction, it's really letting it phase out. I think it's set to phase out anyway. And so they would just let that die over time. That's the 20% deduction for pass-through income. So we'll hit all that. Somebody's writing a book on our Q&A again. Probably one of our guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't even move it. Anyway, it's funny. You guys would have to see this to understand what I'm doing over here. But when somebody writes a lot, it just tries to cram it into a small space. So it ends up being like a really long question. Takes up half the page. All right, let's go over what the Social Security tax looks like, and I'm going to get my little pen out here so I can scribble for you guys so you get some idea of what we're looking at. So Social Security tax, self-employment tax, whatever you want to call it, it's this 12.4%. There's also a Medicare at 2.9, and this goes on all dollars. So we're not talking about increasing that at all. We're just going to leave that alone. What we're talking about is letting there be a donut here in the middle between $137,700 and $400,000, where the tax is zero, and then that 12.4% comes back. This is why it's important. It's because employers pay half. So if you have employees that are high income earners, you may be actually increasing on the employer, right?
Yep.
So all of a sudden, the employer's paying a little bit more, which might be a little surprise to some. Anything you want to hit on that?
No, and that's one I actually have less issue with. I don't know if I would go about it this way, but with the problems with Social Security right now, needs more money. I just don't know how much they're going to get with $400,000 and above.
Well, you're going to have to address the issue. Is that when Social Security came about, I believe you had about a two-year life expectancy beyond the date of earning your Social Security.
Nobody was expected to live to get Social Security.
Yeah, you're talking about a few years tops. Now that's how we plan for retirement. So a lot more is going out than is going in. So we need a lot more in there. This is the, I'll just put married filing jointly 1040. This is just your regular tax rate. See if I can actually make the four stick there. And so the big areas is always fun. So this is before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So then we have the Tax Cut and Jobs Act come in and we moved to these brackets. And so you could see there was a big expansion of this 35%. We moved the 24%. So in other words, this was supposedly better for people, this Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And what they're going to do is just take these two and make them 39.6. So pretty good, bump up for, just increasing it. And that's over the $400,000 mark. So you make $400,000 and below, no change.
Not a fan of this one.
Why not?
I kind of like the idea. That's a huge jump from 32 to 39.6%. And I don't think we get much out of it. One of the things I see is more of how do we punish the wealthy without us getting a whole lot of benefit from the changes.
Mm-hmm. And before somebody says, well, what about all the billionaires that contributed? Why are they cutting their own throat? Because they're not selling any of their stock. The whole big one is you don't pay tax until you sell something. That's a capital asset. Mm-hmm. I always kind of joke about that. It's like, why would they do that? Because these guys aren't going to be paying any tax anyway. They already have their wealth. They have more money than they'll ever be able to spend. And if they do, they're probably going to borrow against their asset base, which is also non-taxable. So it's kind of a joke. Somebody asked, and this is Chris. Sorry, man. Two-part question about a self-directed 401k where I'm the trustee. Is it possible to contribute fully to my 401k this year and cash out a portion of the 401k to convert it to a Roth IRA? Yeah, so you would contribute to it, and you actually have to, for your employee deferral portion, you have to do that before the end of the year, Chris. And then after the end of the year, but before the business files its tax return, the company would match, would do a 25% of your compensation contribution into the 401k and be able to write it off. They can actually contribute up to whatever they paid you, but not deduct it all. So assuming that we want the tax deduction then, and assuming everybody's under 50, that would be $57,000 total between your deferral and the company match. And then you'd want to convert a portion of that to a self-directed IRA. In other words, you want to make a portion of it taxable to go to your IRA. And you can do that. And then if you needed money to pay the tax and you wanted to pull it out of the 401k, you'd more than likely end up having to borrow it. And I'm just trying to see, that would be about you'd be right on the cusp of being able to borrow out enough to pay the tax on it, because you're going to be at right around a withholding rate would be 28% on a conversion. Oh, you would be looking at that. I don't think they do that. I think they just.
The withholding rate. I think the withholding rate may have dropped to 25%, but I'm not sure about that.
But so let's say you did 200,000 to be able to contribute enough to it or thereabouts, you'd be right around there to get your full max contribution. Then, you could borrow out enough to pay for the tax. You could do that. Somebody says, if a husband passes, does the surviving spouse residents get a step up in basis on half or none? And the answer is, it depends. Community property make any difference? Yes. So if it's separate property state, then half of the house gets a step up. So the easiest way to think about this, oops, I don't want to do subtitles. Let's say we have a house in here. Let me just make this. So let's say we have a house and it's worth 600,000 and your basis is 200,000 and spouse one, spouse two. And spouse one passes, then half in a separate property state, then half of this would step up in basis. So you'd have
so his step up share would be 300,000.
His share would be 300,000, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So only 100,000?
Well, spouse two would be at 100,000. So their basis would actually jump by $200,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you'd have spouse one's basis is 100,000. Spouse two is 100,000.
Right.
And then it would step up to 300,000. So $200,000 step up. I'll just say SU step up. If you're in a separate property state, if you're in a community property state, then you step up to the full 600,000 upon one spouse passing. That's why it's kind of funky, but, and that works not just for house, that works for everything. So if you have any capital assets, so stocks, everything pops up in value. Hope that makes sense. All right, let's go over some of the repercussions of some of these changes, because not everybody really grasps what it means when you're messing around with tax brackets. You're saying, what does it really mean to me? Well, let's just say you're an S corporation and you're making, I'm just going to use the $300,000 mark. So let's say you're making $300,000 pre-2018. You were paying a total of about 33%. And this is federal. There's also your state. And what ended up happening under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was you were a little bit lower than that. Your total tax, because you, again, we're just factoring everything in, 19.2 buy-in proposal wouldn't change at all. Where you see that change is at that magic number of 400,000, and then you see a big jump up. And the big jump up is that what Jeff was saying, what he didn't like, which was you're stepping from, what is it, 20 something to 39.6, like you're, what was that, you know, right there. It's because of this big jump from 32% to 39, but you're skipping right across. Like, this is small compared to the 24. So you're jumping 15% pretty quickly. But the big one is that 32%. You just skipped right over 35. You increased it to 39.6 anyway, but you're having a 7.6% increase on all the dollars, and you could see it playing out here when you're looking at the numbers. So it can get, realistically, these are the big ones. When you're getting over that $400,000 mark, this is when this stuff really starts to show some pain. And that's without factoring in 199A or some of these other things. Capital gains and dividend rates, this is the big one right up here. So for those of you guys who don't know, when you receive dividends from qualified dividends from a regular company like a United States company, they're taxed as long-term capital gains. So dividends are long-term cap gains. So when you increase the capital gains rate, you're increasing the tax on your dividends. And a lot of people make their living off of dividends. A lot of the higher income folks that have accumulated stocks, they're disciplined. They don't necessarily sell them. They're going to get hit possibly with this 39.6. How many people do you think, like what percentage of people do you think actually get up over that million? Because it's got to be a fraction of a fraction.
Oh, yeah. I'd say it's probably under 1%.
Yeah. So this is going to have an impact on a very small number, less than 1%. It's going to be a fraction of a 1%, but they're going to get hit hard. All of a sudden, they go from this 21%, this 20%, which really isn't 20%, because when you get up over this line here, this 250, you have something called the net investment income tax, which is, what is it, 3.8? So you have that gets, knocked onto this. So it goes up to 23.8, and now you're going to be up over 40.
Yeah. Another place I see this really hurting people is people that have windfall capital gains. They've been bought out for something, maybe their stock in the company or something like that. Something that maybe they may not have done normally, where they may be in the 100,000 bracket year after year. Mm-hmm. They have suddenly have, we see it all the time, that a client will now have a couple million dollars in capital gains, mm-hmm. and they're going to get killed with this.
Yep. Then one time deal. Like, so this is where it pays to have your friend, the accountant online, because you may be doing installment sales. You may be trying to defer some of this out. Some of you guys are saying, hey, wait a second, this is only on $400,000 and above. Yes, this is the $400,000 line. So anything above this line. And it's not 39.6 on every dollar. It's 39.6 on amounts above that. Mm-hmm. So we have a graduated tax. It's not retroactive. So you pay, so on this dollar, you're paying 32 cents. On this dollar, you go above, you're paying 39.6. So just so you get an idea. All right. We have a whole bunch of questions. Does the capital gains rate of 39.6 apply for real estate sales or just stocks? All capital gains?
Short and long.
Short and long. That's right, because short term is going to be at regular rates anyway. And also dividends. And Chris says, what about the 199A? They're talking about letting it expire or putting a fork in it. I think they would have a lot of contesting against letting it getting rid of it. I think they'll just let it expire. Let's see. On the spouse dies example, is there a difference in if property is owned joint tenants versus tenants in common? Somebody says, I don't know what the legal terms means. I don't think so, because your basis is your basis, whether you, like, the step up of all community assets. And so they're all assets. So what we care about is that it's capital, and a tenant in common just means an undivided 50% interest. So in other words, it's like, I don't own the northeast part of the property. I own half the property. In joint tenants, I own all of it together with somebody. So in order to separate it, I'd have to bifurcate it. In a tenant in common, I can sell my tenant in common interest. It's still just an undivided interest.
Have you seen any tenants in common between spouses?
The default is almost always going to be joint tenants with rider survivorship. Mm. But, you know, it doesn't mean, like, sometimes what you'll see is people buy it before they get married and boom. How would a living trust affect the new rulings? It's not new, but it wouldn't affect those. It's the state in which you live. Somebody said, what about corporate taxes? It's interesting you say, what about corporate taxes? So the corporate tax rate is going from 21% to 28% in theory. And remember, Congress has to take action. And right now we don't know who has Congress, right? We might be a deadlock. It might be Republicans, but the proposal is all we're talking about. And just remember, it wasn't even 35%. Corporate taxes went up to 39%. They forget that, like, that 300,000 mark was 39%. So you had a really sizable decrease. And you also had these qualified dividend rates. This gets kind of funky. So this is the reason they say this is because you have the 3.8 net investment income tax on amounts over 250,000. So I'm just going to kind of draw that in there to make a little line so you guys understand why there's an increase. But you kind of just see that there's this huge jump. And the reason that there's this big jump is because of that $1 million mark. You have this big jump because of the $400,000 mark. And so you see these numbers increase. All that's going to do, and again, I'm a business advocate, so I'm just going to say you're going to make it a little bit less attractive to do business here. When does 199A expire? I believe it's phased out in 2025, if I'm not mistaken. Most of those sunset in 2025, so it'd be gone in 2026. And I don't know that Biden wasn't exactly easy to talk to before the election on nailing down specifics on tax. So they just put some stuff out. And that's not a knock. That's just, again, I'm trying to be factual here. I'm not criticizing any candidates. I'm not trying to be partisan. Just saying is that there's a few things that we don't know because it wasn't like he was a chatty Cathy on this stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure even if they control both houses and the White House that they can get that corporate proposal passed. I think it will probably move up, but I'm thinking more along the lines of 25 and 30% for corporate rate. Mm-hmm. I don't see any way that the 59% proposal is ever going to happen. It's too much money.
Yep. Here's a funny one. So he's saying, hey, there's something wrong about California. It depends on how title is held. Joint tenants versus community property with rider survivorship. There is no community property with rider survivorship. So you either hold it joint tenants, you own it tenants in common, or you own it tenants in entirety, which doesn't exist in California. But whatever. The capital asset is a capital asset. If you're married and you have a marital asset, the federal defers to the whatever the state is holding. So I'll look at it. If there is something weird there, I've just never seen it. Have you ever seen an issue? Mm. Got a lot of clients in California, but we'll absolutely take a look. Because if I own stock, my stock basis still steps up. So I'm not aware of any reason that wouldn't hold true in real estate, but happy to take a look, Wendy. All right, proposal to restore the P's limitation. This is on itemized deductions. So you never liked P's.
P's?
You never liked P's? So what they did is somebody's being funny out there. What they're doing again is they're looking at a phase out. And so, well, the easier way to look at this is actually a really good accountant did a breakdown on what it would actually look like for people in depending on what bracket. But what ends up happening here is anything, but if let's say that I'm making, in this particular case, they use $1 million. Let's say I'm making $1 million a year, you would subtract off the level of 400,000, which is anything above that is what Biden is proposing that we hit. So you'd have 600,000. You'd multiply that by 3, mm-hmm. which would be 18,000. And you'd subtract that from your total itemized deductions for the year. So let's say that you have 40,000 of total. You gave some to charity. You had state and local taxes and you had mortgage. So you'd take the 40,000. You'd subtract that 18. And that would be your limitation. That would be how much you could take. So in this particular case, it's $22,000. If you're married filing jointly, you're better off taking that $24,800. And somebody says, in a 1031 exchange, if 1031 exchange will be abolished, will this go away from 2022? We don't know what they're going to do. They've shown basically they want to tax wealth generally. So you're going to see the big ones that you're going to hear about is the step up in basis is going to go away. So we were just talking about step up in basis and what happens with the house. Those are the things that are on the chopping block. And they didn't say, this is what we're definitely going to do. What they said is, hey, we're going to explore these areas. And so the idea, I guess, is that they would get together and decide what's the most palatable. They'd make sure that they don't meet a huge amount of resistance. And, you know, most times politics, they're pretty good about seeing which one's going to tick people off the most and trying to avoid that one if they can. But what ends up happening is for people that are making a lot of money, if you had $40,000 of itemized deductions, which we're just using as an example, that's, we're just picking that out of the air. The $40,000, what is the actual tax benefit? Right now, it's $14,800. After, if you put in that PEAS limitation, you're just reducing that, the actual tax benefit, and you're reducing it to the tune of about $3,600, or, you know, roughly, what would that be, about 30%. So, yeah, it starts to hurt a little bit. So what do they look like together? Individual tax rates are capped at 37%. Under Biden, it would be 39.6. Corporate rates right now are at 21% flat. And this is good, actually, like 28%. And it's still going to be flat. So like if you had to, we went back a few years before 2017, which really the Tax Cut and Jobs Act came out right at the end of 2017. So if you went back to 2016, and you told me you could have a flat corporate tax, the only thing I would have said is make it graduated. Like don't have every dollar taxed at 28 cents, have some of it taxed at 15 and some of it at 20 and then 28%. Like have it phase in a little bit rather than just flat. But I'm still glad that we have a flat tax. Like this isn't going to be astronomically hard. Dividends right now, they're taxed at a high of 20%, qualified dividends, I should say. I'm just going to put a qualified dividends, which if you're over 250K, you're really at 23.8. And under Biden, you would be at 39.6. Excuse me, I'll put it this way.
Right.
You're at 20% at 250,000 plus, you're at 23.8. At 1 million plus, you're at 39.6 plus 3.8, whatever that is. I should actually do that math, right?
So 43.4.
That's insane. Don't candy coat it, Jeff. Payroll taxes, you are at, the math ends up being, I'm just going to say 15.3, although there is part of that's deductible, up to 137,700. And then it's the 2.9 thereafter. There is a plus a 0.9, right? It goes up to 3.8 or something over a certain dollar amount.
Over 250,000.
Yeah, over 250. So we'll say 2.9 up to 250K, which then goes to 3.8. And then under Biden, that would be 15.3 up to 137,700. And then you'd go 2.9 up to 400,000. And then you'd go back to 15.3 over, you'd go back up to 15.3. They're making it kind of complicated. Estate taxes right now, we're at 11.58 million. Don't quote me on it. It's pretty close. So you have this big chunk. It's going to drop down to right around 5 million plus in index for inflation. So it's going to be right around 5 million. Excuse me. Trump doesn't do that. Under Biden, it's going to go back down to about 5 million. And then the step up, yes. And if Biden, and I would just say no question mark, because they said these are the things they're considering. But, you know, that's just, sometimes I wonder whether it's just, they're going to look and come up with some idea again that might be palatable, because I think they'd get a lot of.
Now, has Biden talked about increasing the tax rate on estate tax?
No. He's talked about letting it, the exclusion phase down. And go out. And somebody's saying, hey, it's interesting because the Trump's tax cut caused me to pay more in taxes. And Joyce, that's absolutely right. when the Tax Cut and Jobs Act came out, I did a webinar called Taxmageddon, because they did away with miscellaneous itemized deductions. And if you're an investor, you understand how important those are, because that's how you write off your expenses. If you have unreimbursed expenses as an employee, right, you didn't get that. And then they put a SALT limitation. So the bad things, so like if we want to be fair, we want to, you know, Trump will do a bad stuff. The miscellaneous itemized deductions was a big one. In the SALT, that nailed everybody that was in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Maryland, where their high state,
California,
Oregon, like they nailed a whole bunch of people, and it hurt. So when I look at the numbers of how much tax revenue is brought in, tax revenue off of individuals went up total. And some people would say, well, you know, more people were employed and all these other things. I'm just stating a fact. Tax revenues against on individuals went up, and it went down for businesses. So they gave a tax cut to a lot of businesses, which in turn will equal oftentimes more money for individuals. And then the economy did take off. So I guess now, interesting.
Another place that corporations got hurt that a lot of people don't realize is if your corporation made under $75,000 a year, you were actually paying more tax under TCJA.
Yeah.
Because you had to give up your 15 and 20% brackets.
Yeah.
To pay that flat 21.
So really, really bad is no more 15% tax, corporate tax, and no more entertainment expense.
Mm-hmm.
So they got rid of the entertainment expense in businesses. Somebody says the elimination of the itemized deduction was the Achilles heel. Yep. Somebody says, has Biden made any comments regarding the Cadillac tax on high value health care plans? I don't think so. Have you heard
anything? I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah. And somebody asked about the opportunity zones too. And I haven't heard anything on the opportunity zones either.
I don't think we're going to hear anything in regards to health plans until Supreme Court mm-hmm. makes a decision on ACA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to have to because they don't know. And again, if you listen to the Supreme Court, they seem pretty open to the idea that they could bifurcate out anything that was unconstitutionally Affordable Care Act and keep it. And that was contrary to what a lot of pundits were saying about Barrett and Kavanaugh. But again, if you just apply the principle, you try to keep the portion, like you'll strike down portions of the law. And unless it's so integrated into the law that it can't stand on its own, you're going to try to knock off the portions that are unconstitutional and keep the rest. So the Affordable Care Act, I believe, is going to be fine. But, you know, I've been wrong before with the court, and you never know. They're the ones that write all the opinions. I've just been watching it. Somebody's asking, will SALT go away? I don't know. I don't think he said specifically. And I apologize for not knowing. There just wasn't a lot out there on it. So my guess is that if he's smart, he's going to look at his constituency and say, hey, these are the states where there's a lot of blue, and I'm going to take some of the paint off for him. So I wouldn't be surprised if it does become a bargaining chip. Somebody says 0.1% over $1 million of income, 1% over $400,000. Cynthia, that is awesome. And you're absolutely right. I thought it was a fraction of 1%. So you're talking about the Biden plan, really the bad stuff, bad for top 1%, you know, so there's a lot of truth in the idea that it's only really going to hurt people in that big one. But unfortunately, they have a lot to do with what goes on in our economy. And so it's always that unintended consequence that I get worried about. So what should we do in 2020 going into 2021, end of the year? One thing that I want everybody to consider is gain harvesting. And gain harvesting just means selling now to incur gain at what we know it is. Say, hey, I'll pay the tax now, assuming that you're not in the highest tax bracket and you're going to add fuel to the fire. But especially if you're married filing jointly and you're below $80,000, your capital gains don't go to increase your bracket, but they're taxed based on your bracket, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not going to raise your bracket to a higher level. It's just used for calculating the capital gains. So if you're at $80,000 or $70,000 and you sell $50,000 of capital gain asset, your tax bracket now, you're not sitting in the 120,000. You're sitting still at the 70 for purposes of your bracket, but your capital gains would be partially at zero and partially at 15%, right?
Yep.
So you'd have about $10,000 at zero, and then you'd have $40,000 of those capital gains taxed at 15%, but you didn't just bump up a bunch of your tax bracket. You're not flying into a higher tax bracket.
And as we talked about with this gain harvesting, if you sell it all on December 31st, it doesn't mean you can't buy it all right back.
Yep. So you sell now. So let's just say that you bought a tech company at $100 and it went up to now at $500. So you sell it, you have $400 of gain, and then you buy it back. Your basis is now $500. You're allowed to do that even within the 30 days. The 30-day wash sale rule is only about losses. So you may want to look and say, hey, I want to harvest some of my gain and get it back that way. The reason you would do that, especially is this, if you're in a lower tax bracket, I tell people to do this anyway. Just get yourself to, you know, get up to the 80,000 if you're married. They'll be sitting there at 40,000. They'll be like, well, I have a bunch of stocks that have gains in it. I'm like, well, sell it, buy it back. Doesn't cost you anything. You might have a little spread there, but it's so much less than paying the tax eventually.
Now, let's say I've been playing Corona roulette. I bought a bunch of depressed stocks and have watched them rise back in value. I believe the market crossed 30,000 points today.
Yep.
But now I have all these short-term positions that have gained dramatically. Is that something to take into consideration, or?
I'd be looking at it, and where I'd be looking at that, Jeff, is I'd be saying, I don't want to sell it early and buy it back. I want to hold it for a year.
Right.
So if I'd probably just be sitting on it, even though maybe it's gone up a little bit. If you're really worried about it dropping, then just buy a put.
True.
To ensure the dropout of it. But somebody says, why would you not do gain harvesting at higher tax bracket given the tax rate is going to get higher next year? Well, that's what I'm saying, Sam, is that if it looks like it's going to go up, and nobody has a crystal ball, so I don't know. What I would probably be doing is saying, hey, if I know that right now I could pay 15% and I don't have to worry about it, I'd probably do 15%. And if it's not going to change my lifestyle, I might just lock in my gain at 15%. Now, Biden is also only really talking about things that are over 400,000. So if you're over 400,000, you're already sitting in a pretty high tax bracket. Mm-hmm. If I could lock in 20% and I'm a really high income person, I might do that so that I don't have to worry about a 39.6% hit or a 43.4. Whatever it was, the 39.6 plus the 3.8, 43.4.
Yes.
I don't want to get hit with that, especially if you live in a state that has a tax too, like California. You're not 43, you're at over 50%. You're going to be giving up 53.4%. That's pretty painful. I may take a smaller hit now just so I don't have to worry about it. And then, but capital gain does increase your AGI, correct?
It does increase your AGI, but if you ever want to lose your mind, take a look at the calculation of taxes when you have capital gains. Mm-hmm. It's a page long mess of about 30 or 40 lines and how you calculate the gains.
Yep.
It's not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah. And the capital gains are part of, I think what they're saying is because they want to make sure that you don't go above the taxable income on a 199A deduction. So you may be looking at that, but that's taxable income. So you can still offset it. Let's see, our capital gains rates for foreigners 15 or 30% if the taxable event occurs in the U.S. It's going to depend on your treaty. The U.S. is going to tax you on that at long-term capital gains rates at our rates. Mm-hmm. So it could be 0, 15. They do a withholding, but you get it back after you pay. You file your tax return. You're right. A 1040 NR, so a 1040 non-resident, assuming that you don't live here. If you live here, then you're filing your 1040 non-resident. Well, you're a resident, so you'd be filing your 1040 anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is fun stuff. So Roth conversion. Roth conversion, I just want to go over the math with you guys. Well, actually, I have a slide that I did this. I didn't even think about that. A lot of people look at it. This is the difference between doing a Roth. This is a Roth IRA versus a traditional. And all I did is I said, you know, 5% growth rate, 2% yield. So it's, you know, somewhere around 7% annual account turnover, 25% ordinary tax rate and 15% capital gain rate. I'm just looking and saying, hey, assuming that I'm turning the account over and I have somebody managing it or I'm managing it, I'm selling a few things here and there and I'm getting a decent growth rate and I'm getting a decent dividend yield out of it, then realistically over a period of years, this is 25 years, this is how much I am saving quite a bit by doing my Roth because I'm not paying any tax when I take it out, right? In a traditional IRA, it's a smaller gap, But the one thing you have to consider, and this is why it's fun to do the numbers, is I'm getting a tax benefit. So actually, I'm not sitting at the same level. I'm actually starting slightly higher. And it ends up being about the same place. And so if all things are equal, and I'm just going to give you guys an example, if I started off with $100,000 that I put into a Roth somehow, some way over the years, I contribute it. And then I had a traditional. That traditional, I have to have my $100,000, and I either subtract the tax hit from my Roth. Let's say it's 25%, so $25,000. So I actually only have $75,000. If you don't want to say I'm going to subtract the tax hit from the Roth because I got no deduction for it, then you would say, hey, you got an added benefit of $25,000, oops, over here on the traditional. So you have to factor that stuff in. If your growth is the same, if your tax is the same when you contribute now versus retirement, they are equal. So the Roth and the traditional, there's no difference on the money because you're getting more bang for your buck in a traditional because I'm saving. Now, where the traditional is better, so if I'm going to give a check to the traditional, actually, let me just do this. I can make it go away quick. Where you do the check to the traditional is better when your tax rate is higher now than retirement. So if you are in, let's say you are sitting at the 37% tax rate and you're putting money into a 401k for every dollar you're putting in, and then when you retire, your tax rate's going to drop down and you're going to be at the average tax rate for retirees is less than 10%. But let's just say it's 22%. Then I'm going to go the traditional because I'm getting a 37-cent bonus for every dollar I'm putting in there. So always consider this stuff. Do the math beforehand. Where a Roth is better, and again, I'll just make this really simple. Roth is better when you are in a lower tax bracket now than when you retire, which makes, you know, that's why they're so awesome for young people and stuff. It's like, hey, if you're just getting started, get that money in there. Somebody says, but no one can predict the future tax rate. Then isn't it difficult? Yes, you're absolutely right, Rashi. That's why it's so like mind-numbing. Everybody that says, oh, this is better, I'm always like, well, it depends. If you're in a really high tax bracket,
it's kind of like that question, when should I start collecting Social Security?
Depends. It's a calculation. Somebody says, do those gains have to be around at least a year if you're going to gain harvest? No. Why would you not do gain harvesting, higher bracket, given that it might go up? You could. Yeah, there's something to be said for certainty. I am cynical. Yes. Yeah, no, I think that so for short-term gains, is there a benefit to gain harvesting at 37% bracket? All right, so if I have short-term gain, and let's say I have $10,000 and I'm at 37% bracket, the only time I'm doing this and doing my gain harvesting is if I have long-term capital losses. I'll put losses in there. Because let's say I have long-term capital losses, then I have zero capital gain. They offset. Even though long-term losses, long-term gains are taxed less, it's still, this is actually better off.
Yeah, I'm a fan of anytime you have unused capital losses, you should be harvesting any gains you got.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you always look and see whether you have any long-term losses, see what they are, because then you can harvest some of your gain. So what you do is, again, this is the look, is you say my long-term capital losses equal X dollars. So sell short-term capital gains equal to X dollars, then buy them back. Make sense? Because these create zero tax. They offset each other. So I hope that makes sense. Somebody says, I consider my Roth to be a hedge against future tax increases, and there is a benefit of not having to require minimum distributions. Yep. I'm just saying from a tax impact, there's really no difference.
And don't forget, you can actually do both and contribute to the one depending on what kind of year you're having.
Yeah. Something that we didn't hit here, by the way, was this carry forward NOL. We have folks that pick and choose when they're going to do a cost segregation, things like that. If you can create a loss and you can pick and choose a year to make a loss, do the conversion during that year and take your traditional IRA and convert it into a Roth, or your traditional 401k and convert it. somebody says if you have a loss in a Roth, does it count as long-term? No. Or short-term? No. Wait on harvesting losses. So remember, long-term capital losses offset all short-term capital gains and long-term capital gains. So if you have a bunch of losses and you're in a decent tax bracket this year and you think you're going to go up, you know, so if you're sitting there and you're like, hey, you know what, I could take my loss this year, but it's worth 22 cents to me. If I wait till next year, maybe it's going to be worth more to me. Maybe it's going to offset, maybe, especially if you have some positive stuff coming up. Like if you have some deals that are going to close next year, then maybe it's a good idea to say, hey, you know what, I just want to wait on my losses. I don't want to sell these things at a loss right now. I just want to wait and sell them at a loss next year when they're worth more to me. And then gifting. Gifting both from a standpoint of gifting to heirs. If you are north of the, especially the folks that are over the 25 million mark, then we need to talk about getting it transferred to your estate. Because if that 11 million goes away, portability may go away. There's a lot of things that may go away. You have a huge gift tax exclusion right now of over 11 million. Maybe it's time to use some of that if you want to get it out of your estate. The other one is gifting to charity. And that goes up to this 100% of adjusted gross income. You can give up to 100% to charity in 2020 under the CARES Act. So it's 100% AGI. So if you want to give away a bunch of money, this would be the year to do it. Somebody says waiting on using a loss means you have to hang on to the dog and not sell. Yep. You're hanging on to it. Maybe it comes back. Maybe it doesn't. You're just sitting on something that's a loss. And I'm not saying it for a long period of time. We're sitting here in end of November. You're talking about waiting 6 weeks to sell it. So that just waiting until January and saying, hey, I'll do that and then harvest some losses. There's tons of questions coming out and some weird stuff. What about bonus depreciation? Bonus depreciation's phasing out. So they haven't said anything about bonus depreciation. My guess is that they just let it phase out. Here's charity. Two things for 2020. And that is that the limitation went up to 100%. And you have an above the line deduction of $300.
So if you can't itemize or you're going to take the standard deduction, you can still take up to $300 of deductions on the front of your 1040.
So you can take the, $300 plus standard deduction. So that's a lot of stuff we covered.
Yeah.
Somebody says, did you find out if it's $300 per person or $600 mailing, filing jointly? Joyce, it's all over the place. We have multiple sources that say it's 600 and a bunch of accountants that are out there saying it's 600. But our reading and my initial reading was it was $300 for a tax return. And that's what the I believe there was a wasn't a tax ruling, but it was guidance given that said it was $300 per return. It's going to be weird. So the answer is, I don't know. And nobody knows. But the Treasury says we're going to treat it as per tax returns. So me and the Treasury, sometimes we don't see eye to eye.
Like, no,
they just put out another thing on the PPP loans that got Grassley all up in arms again, saying that they're wrong. But they said you can't deduct expenses taken by from the PPP loans. And that's not what the law says. And Grassley keeps writing saying that's not what we meant. Mm-hmm. And when you have the guy that was chairing the committee saying that's not what we meant, you'd think they'd actually listen. But no, they doubled down on it and just put out more guidance.
Right.
So it's like, they're like, we don't care what you thought, is what it says, and we're going to, this is how we're going to treat it. So they're not being too nice. You'd think that they would give us a break, but they're not. If you guys like this sort of stuff, I'm going to give you guys two things that you could do if you like tax planning and you want to really dive into the year-end tax planning. Number one is hop on in, go to this hot link, the tax toolbox, and get the tax toolbox. There's about 200 pages plus of materials in there to help you save tax dollars. Let me see if I can actually get a color. There we go. 200 pages, hours of videos. I think it's somewhere around 7 or 8 hours of videos, over 30 videos. And you can jump in. You could jump into the tax toolbox and grab that. And you will get into our December 1st TaxWise workshop. The TaxWise workshop, all of that, I believe we're looking at $595 for the toolbox plus class. You'll get the recording of it, of course. If you want just electronic version, it's $495. So if you don't want books, then we just give you that savings because we don't have to buy it. It makes our life easier, makes your life easier. You don't have to wait either.
But I'm on like flipping pages.
I like books. That's the thing. I always buy the book and then I like to make piles of them, kick my wife off. But there's lots and lots in here if you like this stuff. And I'm also going to be doing something else before the end of the year. I'm going to be recording a year-end checklist and how to do some year-end planning. This year is going to be really interesting. One of the things that we do have in our benefit is that you can actually create a 401k after the year end. So it used to be you had to have your plan in place before December 31st. You could actually do it after. So we'll still have a chance to do some planning even after the year's out. But we're going to be limited to the employer contribution, the profit sharing portion. We won't be able to defer employee pay for 2020 unless it was in place.
And we're going to need some compensation for that person.
Yeah, we're going to need. So figure that your company can match 25% whatever you paid yourself. So if you're a S corp or something like that, and you're paying yourself $100,000 a year, you could put your company can contribute $25,000 and write it off all the way up until it files its tax return. So that would give us until September 15th. Other things we may be looking at is doing cost segregation, and we look at these things carefully, especially in October when we're making the elections. I can tell you that there's some people. I think there was probably 20 people this year where we carved off huge chunks of tax. Mm-hmm. Because of the cost segregations that were done in October for 2019. So know that we don't ever give up on getting some benefits. Some of the things we have to do, like charitable giving and things like that, you have to do this year before the year's out. If you want to pay yourself compensation, you have to do it before the year's out. If you want to write something off, like an extra mortgage payment, you have to do it before the end of the year.
Right.
There's things like that, but a lot of things we can do even after the year end. Just to give you guys some ideas. Somebody says, there's a couple more questions and then we'll get out of your hair. We're already over, but what's new? If I pull $100,000 from my 401k with the CARES Act, am I required to pay it back to the same 401k or any QRP? If it's the early withdrawal, you can put it into any plan as long as it's a qualified plan. So you can put it into an IRA, a 401k, all that fun stuff. Somebody says, our tax Tuesday is every Tuesday now. We tweet every other Tuesday because we can only love you so much. Now we give you guys the recordings. If we have some pretty loyal followers out there that and they like to write me things about things that I say that are whack. And they're like, what about this? What about this? There's a ton. As you guys see, sometimes we have conversations with the people that are out there. I'm going to go look up the California thing and say if there's any way you could somehow lose your step up on title. I don't think there is, but I'm willing to eat crow if I'm wrong, but I don't think there is. But I've been wrong before. And I'll be wrong again, I'm sure. We sit here and do enough of these. We answer so many questions. It's just being open and inquisitive and willing to listen. I'd like to take advantage of the CARES Act provision to pull $100,000 from retirement account before the year end without penalty. I'm wondering if there's a benefit to pulling from one type of account over another. You can't pull it, I don't believe. Can you pull it out of an inherited IRA?
I don't think you can.
I think there's a limitation. So you probably want to do it to the SEP. Somebody says inherited IRA versus SEP. I think you do the SEP. Somebody says, hey, is the tax toolbox free for platinum? No. The tax toolbox normally $1,500. I'm just giving you guys the best deal ever because you guys are on a tax Tuesday. And so we just give you the best, lowest price. So it's normally $1,500. We just say, hey, forget that. It's $595. Oh, yeah, I even put $295. Look at me. Someone's going to grab that screenshot. $295. And then it's $495 e-version.
People are hitting print screen left and right.
Yeah. If you don't like it and you're like, you say, hey, this was bunk, then I'll just give you your money back. Make it really easy. It's kind of weird, though, if it's electronic. So just be honest. But I don't want anybody to ever feel like they buy something they're not getting a big value at. The way I look at tax stuff is you should be getting about a 3-to-1 return on every dollar you spend on tax. So I really like whenever you do tax planning, it should be paying you somewhere in the $1,000 an hour realm. We have people that we blow it out of the water and some people that it's closer. But in any event, if you're doing tax planning, it should be paying you money back in your pocket. So we want to make sure that we're getting it.
What about tax-wise? Mm-hmm. That's December 1st, right?
Yep.
I am actually, for everybody who's listening, I am actually encouraging my people to attend tax-wise because there's always something new to learn and a lot of good strategies talked about. So
yes, we're going to give it a big thumbs up. Yeah, Jeff oversees all the accountants here. We have a ton of them. So 30 plus.
Yep.
And so we're going to make sure that so much changes, guys. So we always want to make sure that we're staying up on it. And there's so much. I know right now I've been doing the research on solar. There's a bunch of cool stuff that you can do on solar. And I think that's going to be going up in using tax cuts and working with charitable organizations. We're going to be looking a lot on the cost seg plus the accelerated depreciation. We're going to be going over 288, obviously, and also the offices, different ways to deduct your offices. We have over 30 different strategies, including how to put $57,000 in your Roth account. And that's using a Roth 401k, but you can do it. And there's a whole bunch of other fun stuff that you can do. Income splitting, real estate professional status, all those things go in there. Somebody says, hey, I bought the third event. Oh, look at this. They bought the third edition of TaxWise and they'd like the latest. Nilsen, we'll make sure that reach out to Patty. She'll get you a free version, free copy. We're on version 4. Will TaxWise be recorded? Yes. Is the Roth 401k the same as the solo 401k? They have different pieces in it, but yes. If you set up a solo, you can actually have three buckets in it. Let's see, Chris, I owe you a document. I'm almost done. Anytime I see somebody where like I owe them something, I start feeling immediately guilty. I've been working on stuff at night. I want to make sure we get it. I promise this money. I had it last week, and now I feel like, ooh, we'll get it from you. When you pay back IRA withdrawal under the CAES Act, is it considered a qualified tax deduction? No, they consider it a trustee-to-trustee transfer. So you don't have to worry about that. And then somebody said the CARES loan available. I'm assuming you mean, Mike, the $100,000 loan that was out of the 401k. That expired at the end of September 20-something. It was not mandatory for those folks either. It wasn't mandatory by the administrators. But you could do it if it was solo. So that's gone. It's still $50,000. And then we'll see if it comes back. What are the three buckets for a 401k? Deferred, undeferred, and Roth. So when I say undeferred, non-deductible
right.
bucket.
A little different from Roth.
Yeah. And so a Roth is a Roth, but the non-deductible portion is where we're putting money in that we're not taking a deduction for. That's in the standard plan. And then we do an in-company distribution. So we'll get into all that fun stuff. Hey, if you like this sort of stuff, there's lots of free. You go to our podcast, AndersonAdvisors.com podcast. We do record our Tax Tuesdays. You can go up there. Somebody says, what's the best way to structure a management company? I'm almost always going to make, if it's management, it's going to be an S corp, a C corp, an LLC taxed as an S corp, an LLC taxed as a C corp. It's going to be something that's an active business. Somebody, let's see if there's another cool question. I have a real estate I'm inheriting from death of a parent earlier this month. I'm sorry, Kevin, that's horrible. Going to more funerals than I want to go to and dealing with estates this year. I have a real estate I'm inheriting it. Will has noted beneficiaries. We're worried about step-up basis elimination. What do you do between? You don't have to do anything, Kevin, because they can't retroactively change a law to eliminate your step-up. So you're good.
In cases like this, and I know it's hard to do it in times like this, but would you recommend getting an appraisal on the property?
I might do it just to lock it in.
Yeah. And when you do that, you want to make sure you're telling the appraiser why you're getting the appraisal.
Mm-hmm. Is there a possibility of blanket forgiveness for PPP and new administration? Yeah, they have talked about it. I don't even think it's the new administration. I think that Congress needs to do something. I think they will do something, Ken, before the end of the year. I think that it's horrible that they haven't come up with something now. I think there's a lot of companies. I was talking to an attorney friend of mine who's preparing lawsuits right now in Nevada to keep a chain of gyms open.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a lot of action being taken by the governors that on its face appears to be unconstitutional. But whatever the case, it's putting people out of business and people are starting to get really tired of it. And I'm not going to pick a side on you know, if it's good or bad. I'm just saying that from a constitutional standpoint, I think that there's some problems when people are talking about your conduct inside your home and putting people out of business. It seems to me that the day that they put Costco and tell them to shut down is the day that I'll start listening about the what they're doing to a lot of these smaller businesses. And no offense to Costco. I love Costco. I just think that COVID lives in Costco. I've been saying that since it started. I'm like, ever since they ran out of toilet paper, I'm pretty convinced that everybody goes to Costco and it's always jammed.
I'm just glad I don't have to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm. All right. What did I do to my screen? There we go. The replays are in your platinum portal. We do all the, if you're platinum, you get all the Tax Tuesdays rolling around in there. And you can always listen to our iTunes, Google Play, just go Anderson Business Advisors, our podcast. I do a bunch of other stuff on there too. Michael and Clint have been far more active on the podcast than I have been. I've been doing a lot of events recently because we're getting towards the end of the year. We have lots of folks that are a little nervous. And then also do stick your head in and join us for Infinity when you get a chance. You're all invited and membership is going down to free. So we will talk about that. You don't need to do a link. And I just made Patty probably have a panic attack because I didn't talk to it. What we'll do is just make sure that you're going out there and checking out. We have a lot of material to help you guys through these trying times. Yeah, somebody just posted. Yes, of course you were doing the events and they are playing on podcasts. Yes, probably. Poor Patty. Yes, Sherry. Poor Patty. She has to deal with our nonsense. So if I don't hear from everybody out there, that's right. What is Infinity? We reverse engineered all the, we have a lot of clients that do really, really well and we notice trends with them. So we just tell you guys what everybody's doing that's making the money. It comes down to real simple strategies. There's about 60 companies that we follow. And Paul, if you were charged, they will fix that. There will be no more charge for Infinity, for the basic Infinity. There might be a thing where you have to drop down. There might be something you have to click on there. I don't know what they did. But just go onto our website and look at Infinity. You cannot get away from Infinity once you get to Infinity. It's Infinity Investing. We teach you guys how to trade. There's once a week, we have a trading room open on Wednesday mornings. And you can go in there and trade for free with our professional. Eric Dodds goes in there and he shows you exactly how to trade. You can ask him any questions you want. There really is no cost to it. So it used to be $100 a month. It went down to $9.95 and now it's down to free because I told you guys when we started it years ago that the idea was to, you know, somebody says you have to downgrade the subscription. Go in there and click on that. But check with Patty if you guys have any issues on it. But it is a great way if you have young people, if you have, and I say young, but anybody that's a young adult, get them into Infinity just so that they learn kind of the rules of money and how it actually works. Patty will get you her email. It's P. Peary. Actually, I'll just put it up there. I probably just totally freaked her out. I see Patty out there. So she'll reach out to you. She'll give you her email. She's rolling around out there. And then the advance is still $99 a month or $9.95 a year if you want to go to a bunch of events and have the private placements offering and more of the advanced content. But we'll make sure that that's clearly delineated next year for sure because we're going to have a whole bunch of events. We're having more live events. As soon as we're done with this pandemic, it'd be great. But we're still live streaming the live events too. But the whole goal is to get you guys to get cash flow properties and cash flow investments, including in the stock market. And you treat the stock market the same way you treat being a landlord in real estate. You want the asset to grow, but you also want it to kick you enough cash flow that you can live off the cash flow without having to sell it. I hate seeing people when they're in retirement selling off stuff. And I live it because my mom's always calling me up because she's in that situation. And she's scared. She's very, you know, she doesn't want to lose money. But on the same token, she's nervous as heck when the market starts to fluctuate because she doesn't want to be in a situation where she has to, when she has to sell. Hey, guys, we'll send out the Infinity link to y'all after this so that you guys have it. I'm planning, we weren't going to do one this year, but it will find out tomorrow. I'm thinking that we might do one on December 19th, one more event for the year. I know I said this November's was the last one, but I'm thinking we're going to have to with all the changes that are going on in the economy. And there's so many opportunities floating around out there right now. It's pretty insane that I want to make sure people are get their heads on straight going forward because we have some clients killing it.
Yeah.
Jeff, you see their returns.
Oh, yeah.
And they do, a lot of them do the same stuff, right? Do you think it's earth-shatteringly difficult?
No, I think it's a little knowledge of what they're doing and practicing what they know.
Yep. And patience.
And patience.
Crockpot it. Even really crappy meat is good in a crockpot.
Yes, it is.
You cook it long enough, it gets better, right? So that's what we do with the investing side. And we bring you a whole bunch of experts, including people that put together ETFs, people that put together syndications, everything from mobile home parks to pre-IPO companies. That's right. Crockpot meat.
Mm-hmm. Throw in a couple potatoes
and a little bit of veggies, and it looks good. So you put your stocks, what you're doing is you're looking for companies that are kicking off some cash, which eliminates a big chunk of them. And then you're renting them out it's a fancy way of saying covered calls. And we show you how to do it on a very few companies.
And I was going to mention that Infinity is not about speculating.
No, it's about cash flow. I buy cash flow. We just bought a bunch of apartments. And what was interesting is the sellers were some folks that had purchased they were California investors in North Carolina. And it was funny because they were going to do a big old rehab on it. And then they decided that it wasn't going to increase the appreciation. I could have told them that before they bought it. But the cash flow is great. Mm-hmm. But that's not what their investors want. What they want is to buy something for $6 million and make it worth $8 million and to make their $1 million, put $1 million in it and walk away with $1 million. And I'm like, why would you do that? Fix it up. Just kicking out cash, you're going to make a lot more than $1 million the next few years if you just let it cash flow. And so it's just being able to recognize that those opportunities are all around us. So we'll be able to make sure. Somebody says, am I subject to UBIT, unrelated business income tax, which is a fancy way of saying active income, if I'm using self-directed Roth funds to invest in a C Corp? And it is an LLC tax as a C Corp, treated the same as you are not if you're receiving dividends and you're a passive owner. You are if you're actually running the C Corp. And that's where you get into this thing called a Rob's transaction. It's really hard to be subject to UBIT if you own a C Corp.
Yeah.
And chances are somebody else is running it. As long as they're not a disqualified person, you have nothing to worry about. So if you're just investing in a friend's company and you're not doing anything to help that business along, you're just an investor, then you're fine.
And good example of that is if you invest in Apple stock, you're invested in a corporation.
Yeah. And I believe the PayPal guy did. Is it PayPal? One of those guys.
Elon Musk was PayPal.
It was somebody else, but I can't remember. But they invested through a Roth and it blew up and made millions of dollars. I've actually seen a tax case where somebody had a small investment. They put it in a startup. It made over $6 million. The IRS contested it, saying that wasn't intended. It wasn't fair. Somebody said Peter Thiel. Yep. So they're already getting it. Yeah. They made millions of dollars and didn't have to pay any tax. Hmm. THIEL. Yep. So yeah, you can do that and you can make a ton of money and never pay tax on it. What tax planning strategies can we use? We just went over today until December 31st. All right. So all the CARES Act. So your 100% AGI is this year only. That's a big one. Your loss carry back is this year only. All of the CARES provisions for early withdrawal from your retirement plans are 2020 only. Trying to think of any off the top of my head, but those are a few, but we can always go through. And then you could also do conservation easement. I don't know what that means. Pile's doing something weird. What tax can we use as of today until December before taxes? Oh, giving cost segregation. That's right. Which you can make an election next year. Conservation easements you could do. Contribute to a retirement account. You can actually go after that. So if you are deferring your pay into a retirement account, you have to do that before the end of the year. All right. So that is it. We've done enough. Can a donation of appreciation stock at the 100% charitable limit this year? No, that's actually 30%. Yeah. And then how do I purchase the tax toolbox in the class? I'll give you guys that link one more time. And then we will say, not that, not that, not that, not there it is. ABA.link. Tax toolbox. So if you guys want to jump in, it's a pretty screaming deal. I can guarantee you this. If you don't get at least 3 times your money back, if you don't get a whole bunch of stuff that saves you money, we'll give you your money back. You just email me and yell at me. It works. The stuff isn't magic. Frankly, it's not even new. It's just not a lot of people talk about it. And you have to do it by doing. Somebody says, hey, are there any cash flowing properties for sale under $100 or $100,000? Yeah, yes, we do. We have a whole bunch. And I can put you in touch with people if you want them. I think we just The group we work with in Charlotte has over 40 properties. So we bring them to our Infinity. So the best thing you can do is get into the Infinity group and say that you're interested, and we'll get you squared away. But we buy cash flow. And the only thing we ask is that if you do buy cash flow with our folks, sell them back to us if you're going to get out of them. Perfect, guys. Thanks for joining us, and happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully you're able to get through it without too much rough stuff. I know that everybody's telling us not to drink and not to get together. So
remember, only two people at the table at a time.
Only two people. Make sure you put a mask on your turkey. God knows they're dirty birds. All right, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.